Good evening, you're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name's Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is a half hour of sketch comedy. That's right, it's time for the White Noise Show. And coming up, as always, right afterwards, is the White Noise After Show, this week hosted by myself and joined by special guest Connor Neckleput, who joins me now.
More of a co-host now, aren't I?
I think so. I think at this point we can't really call you that special anymore, though you do say
I've never been that special.
Pretty bizarre things. But anyway, that's coming up on the after show. Coming up right now, though, is the White Noise Show. But let's not forget, as always, you can keep up with us every single day of the week at White Noise UBC on Twitter, at White Noise UBC on Facebook. And, of course, the best of is available at whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. And, of course, if you have any questions for me or Connor on the after show, anything about the show, about what we talk about, any of the content, or maybe you just have a comment about what you think about the show, whether you love it or hate it, send them in. We'll read them out. We'll make fun of ourselves. That's what we like to do. But without further ado, it's time for some White Noise. Warning. The following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by Neckbeards, the Birkenstocks of beards. First up tonight, someone is shopping. Hello there, welcome to Ronnie's Rage. What can I get for you?
Hi, yeah, I'm looking for something new to get mad at.
Anything in particular?
Just something I can throw in people's faces when I'm feeling inferior.
How about Garbage Island? It's bigger than New York and possibly smellier.
Oh, that's old news, dude.
Alright. How about the fact antibiotics are becoming useless as bugs begin to mutate, making them ineffective?
Oh no, that's just terrifying.
How about child soldiers in Africa?
Oh, that's so 2012.
Boko Haram?
Is that some sort of cake?
Never mind. Perhaps something pipelining?
No.
Republicans?
You're not even trying.
Fine. All right, let's try something personal. That works usually. So what's your full name?
Marky Mark.
of course it is. Let me just bring up your Facebook. All right, do some metadata searches and... I know why you should be outraged.
Why?
Your girlfriend's cheating on you.
Ouch. Sorry, I just stubbed me toe. Next up tonight, James Bond is doing his thing.
From the moment I saw you, even though you were with a man I was contractually obliged to murder, I knew we should do stuff.
I want to do stuff too. Kiss me, Jim.
It's James.
Say my name.
Oh, you.
Oh, Jim, you smell just like my father.
That's on purpose.
Whoa, wait, what are you doing?
Pardon?
Did I say you could touch my vagina?
No, but we were, you know, this is usually how it goes.
You usually feed women martinis and try to take advantage of them.
Yeah, no one seems to mind.
Well, you can forget it. I'm not that kind of girl. The nerve of you. Goodbye, Jim.
Well, James, I guess this is a solo mission.
It is difficult to communicate well and be smooth, so stop trying to be smooth.
Next up tonight, someone wants to join some radicals.
Mum, Dad, I've had enough.
Finally, darling. I'm already prepared. Here are the brochures for Fat Camp.
What? No, I mean, I've had enough of the state of the world.
What?
It's time I stood up and I fought against all the depravity and evil in the world.
Is this you playing D&D again?
No, this is for real.
Look, don't join the army, son. Remember what happened to Uncle Dave?
Yeah, he went blind.
No, that wasn't the army. That was because he looked directly at Coral Rove. No, in the army, he lost a leg.
A leg?
Well, it was more like a toe, but it was the big one.
I'm not joining the army. I found a more spiritual calling.
Oh, you're joining a cult?
No, it's a calling. Me and my allies, we have this religious connection.
So, a cult then?
No, it's legit.
Hang on. You're not talking about those people, the terrorists.
They're not terrorists. They are freedom fighters.
If they're not on our side, they are terrorists, son.
You just don't get it. Soon I will be with my allies, united under one divinely given name. As of this day, I swear my allegiance to Anonymous.
So you are joining a cult?
No, we've got masks.
If anyone from Anonymous is listening, please don't hurt me. Next up tonight, Carl and Neil are back. Alright, Carl, I've got a plan.
Nice one. I'm down to my last tin of cat food. And I don't even have a cat.
Then why does it smell like cats in here?
I still like the convenience of the litter tray. So, what's the plan?
Well, you see, I was at that Body World exhibit thing, you know, that thing that set up like Hannibal Lecter's wet dream.
Right, the people with that skin. God, that takes balls.
They're not still alive, Carl.
Oh, well, that's not so bad then.
Look, the point is, I was looking at these bodies when it occurred to me, we could nick these.
We try kidnapping people, remember?
Yeah, not kidnapping old bodies. No, just organs.
And then people will pay money to get them back. That's genius, Neil.
No, we sell them to the highest bidder. Or, you know, the most nearly dead bidder. You know, I want to be ethical about it.
Oh, I see. So, whose organs are we going to nick?
Well, they need to be, like, you know, healthy. So, that really rules out anyone we know. But I was thinking, maybe that bloke who lives on the end of the road. You know, he's always jogging. He's never in the pub. And he smokes really light cigarettes.
Oh, I hate these yuppie types.
Okay, he should be along any moment now.
I don't know if this is going to work, Neil. How are we going to convince him to get in this bag?
What? We're not. We're going to shove it on his head, you muppet.
Oh, right. I see. But what if he doesn't like it?
Oh, just shut up, man. Like, just hold the gun, all right?
Oh, wow. Is it real?
No, which is lucky, because you would have just blown your own foot off, you idiot. Just point it at him when he jumps out, and I'll bag him. Alright? Alright, here he comes. Don't move a muscle, matey, and we won't shoot. Oh, fuck, he ran off.
Well, what are we gonna do now?
Get in the bag, Carl. Let's hope Neil leaves enough of Carl to come back next week. Next up tonight is award-winning documentary, Life as a Troll.
On the outskirts of society lives a race of beings outcasted from society for being different, for being large, ugly, and green. These are, of course, the trolls. Today we interview one such creature who offers his harrowing tale of isolation and stigmatization.
It's really hard being a troll. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes about being trolls. I mean, it's bollocks. I don't want to live under a bridge. I've never asked anyone for a toll, you know, to cross a bridge. But people still throw change at me when I'm out jogging about a creek. I mean, the job market's tough too. I can get lots of work as nightclub security, but who wants to deal with that shit your whole life? I mean, I want to work in finance, but can't get an interview. Part of the problem is I don't fit in most doors. But whose fault is that? And commuting is tough. I mean, being 10 foot, it plays heck with me back. But you never see people give up 3 seats for me. Never. I also wanted to be an actor, but I kept being typecasted as this caricature of an angry, bitter troll that is so degrading to me as a thespian. You know, I mean, the same thing happened to Hugh Grant. I mean, no one is that British. Then there is being mistaken for being an online troll. I end up getting trolled by trolls for being a troll. It's ludicrous. All we want are human rights for trolls. Is that so bad?
But you're not a human.
You are such a racist.
I wouldn't want to be a troll. I'm ugly enough already. Next up tonight, Elvis and Dolly are back.
Elvis, Dolly, we need you to go into China and steal $5 billion.
Goddamn. Who from? ISIS? North Korea?
No, China.
Did they steal it from us?
No. The CIA just needs some cash till Monday. We get paid then.
But the government can't be that broke.
We owe a lot of money to China. We used to just sell drugs to make up the shortfall, but someone complained and now we aren't allowed to. Fucking political correctness. Anyway, so the mission is, you will be transported on an American sub and dropped inside China waters near their main Federal Reserve. Just fill some suitcases with anything shiny and rendezvous back here.
This sounds sketchy to me, Agent Lexington.
Most of your albums are sketchy.
I could kill you, Elvis, and no one would care.
Agent Lexington would care.
Meh.
What about that night we spent together?
I've had better?
How dare you, man? I mean, those pancakes I made were perfect.
Yeah, but the sex was average.
That's why I made the pancakes. Oh, wow, man. I was wanting a submarine. I mean, MLK had a dream, but he never had his own submarine.
I wonder if you can get one with rhinestones.
I'm sure you can. All the best things come with rhinestones.
You obviously never saw a rhinestone cowboy.
No, what was that?
A mistake.
We're approaching Chinese waters. Prepare for stealth mode.
Stealth mode? How's that work?
We all just stay really quiet.
Oh, ingenious.
You mean genius, you idiot, Dolly.
Jesus, give me strength. Give me patience.
He can't hear you.
Fuck off.
We have company. Ship approaching. Ship signaling. What are they saying?
It's Morse code. It says, "This is the Chinese Navy. You are in our waters. Please, fuck off."
Never. We are Americans. We are always right. Prepare to fire, men. And women. Sorry, Brenda.
Thank you. Weapons ready, sir?
Fire!
Firing weapons?
No, I mean, there's a fire over there. What's going on?
Oh, sorry, man, my cigar. Oh, man, I lit it, and those top secret documents are they're on fire now. Anyone got any water?
Quick, grab the extinguisher!
Ah, I got it. All right, let me just read these instructions. I don't want to cause an injury.
Just point and shoot like you normally do.
All right, fine. Hey, why do you guys have more than one fire extinguisher?
We don't get many people starting fires in here.
Sir, do you still want us to fire the weapons?
Oh, shit, right. Yes, quick, before the Chinese...
and Dolly have survived worse, and they'll probably jump at the chance for a bit of plastic surgery. Next up tonight, the Ordinary Gentlemen are back.
Guess who's dead?
I don't know. It's a bit of a weird game to play.
Is it Harry?
No, older.
Phil with a dicky heart.
No, fatter.
Brian, who had the two strokes.
No, and here was acquitted of the stroking charges.
This is like 20 questions for assholes.
Come on, Steve. You know him. You went to primary school with him.
Oh,
he's a knobhead.
Oh, Dan.
Yes, there you go. Yes, Dan is dead.
Wow. What a thing that has happened. Dan is dead.
You didn't like him then?
No, he stole 12 conkers from me when we were in the third year. The bastard.
And you still hate him now?
Well, he still hasn't given them back.
Hello, lads. What's new?
Guess who's dead?
Oh, not again.
Oh, Dan's dead.
Oh, you know.
Oh, yes. I was with him when he went.
Oh, were you, you know?
No, you dickhead. He was helping me with me garden. He was making sure me melons are massive.
Great.
Have you been to see Phil?
Dicky Hart Phil?
Nah, he's in the hospital with ED.
I'm not visiting him in the hospital for that.
Hey, it's tough at our age. It hurts enough to pee as it is.
Come on, lads. Let's go. Maybe we can pick up some cute nurses whilst we're there.
Think we're more likely to pick up an airborne infection.
It's a bit grim in here.
It has to be. So people piss off back to their home.
I know, but look at that telly. It's barely 12 inches.
That's a heart monitor, Steve.
Oh.
Everyone looks miserable.
No shit. No one comes in here for a high five, Errol.
Hey, here's Phil.
Phil!
Hello, lads. Good to see you.
How you feeling?
Aye, much better. My heart is working fine now.
Your heart? I thought you had the clap.
Oh, you told him, Gladys.
Sorry, if it makes you feel any better. I've had it too.
No, that don't make me feel any better.
Well, at least you're coming home soon.
I was meant to be leaving yesterday, but I had a fumble around with the nice lady of the night.
What?
A custodian. Yeah, she gave me syphilis, so I'm here till Friday.
How'd you manage that?
Version of rubber.
No, I mean sleep with the custodian.
A lot of booze. For me, not her. You know, 30 years of using ammonia products, taking its toll.
What did this woman look like?
Oh, you know, short, round, angry. Her name, Ursula Dusty Baps.
Oh, bugger. Better check myself in too. Oh dear, pain comes in all shapes and sizes. Let's just hope you don't get one of those socially constructed embarrassing diseases. Next up tonight is a writer's Q&A.
Good evening, and welcome to Fresh Authors with No Pulp. Tonight's panel consists of the greatest children's author since Aesop. It's Roald Dahl. The creator of Sherlock Holmes and responsible for the substantial rise in peacoat sales, it's Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And finally, the man who made spying sexy, it's Ian Fleming. First question, please. You in the tuxedo.
My question is for Ian Fleming. Who was the best Bond?
The one I wrote in my books.
Next, you with the large pipe.
Hi, my question is for Sir Conan Doyle. Where did you come up with the inspiration for Sherlock Holmes stories?
Well, as they say, write about what you know. And you see, we had a giant evil dog problem in the village, so I wrote about it.
Right, next question. You with the giant peach.
Hi, my question is for Roald Dahl. Why are your stories so interesting and wonderful to read as a child?
Because I don't treat them like idiots.
Next question. You wearing the deerstalker.
Hi, my question is for Sir Conan Doyle. Why does Sherlock Holmes come back from the dead so many times? Doesn't that seem a bit ridiculous?
No, I just stole that from the Bible. You see, he's Jesus.
Next question. You with the marvelous medicine.
Hi, my question is for Roald Dahl. I tried to follow the recipe from your book. Will this make my aunt massive if she drinks it?
No, but it'll probably kill her.
Next question. You with the martini.
My question is for Mr. Fleming. Which is the best Bond book?
Well, that has to be Goldfinger. I mean, come on, Pussy Galore. That was genius.
Next question. You with the bloody knife.
Hey, Sir Conan Doyle, do I have a story for you?
We don't have time. Next question. You, the large and pleasant-looking colossal person.
Hi, my question is for Roald Dahl. Is the subtext of your books that you want to hurt your parents?
Oh, just a little.
Time for one more question. You with the cat on your lap.
Ah, Mr. Fleming, I've been expecting you.
I didn't know we'd made an appointment.
Oh, yes, we have. And no, I don't want you to talk. I want you to sign this book if it's okay.
Fine. But can you stop pointing that laser pen at me?
Oh, sorry.
That's all the time we have for this week. This was Fresh Authors with No Pulp. Join us again soon.
I never liked Sherlock Holmes. I'm much more of an Inspector Gadget fan. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton. starring the voice talents of Connor Neckleput, Sierra Wiley, Caitlin Docking, Ashley Fallis, Dor Tabby, Dottie Davis, and Simon Welton. Music and sound effects by Max Cheers.
All right, there you go. That was, of course, the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoyed that. What did you think, Connor, this week?
I was particularly impressed with your rendition of The Life of a Troll. I thought that was actually very... I like that. I like sort of taking an idea, a very colloquial idea, and then sort of turning on its head or sort of reimagining it in a different way.
Well, it's interesting to use that as an analogy for social justice in the same way, like, that's what Gene Roddenberry did in Star Trek in the 60s. He talked about the difference, you know, the problems of race culture in America using aliens.
Yeah.
You know, that's what good sort of satire does, hopefully.
And you know what? I bet no one got it in America.
Or they just thought it was a funny thing about trolls. Yeah, it's funny. The last line I thought about this week a lot, which is the line where we're talking about Sherlock Holmes, because the truth is, I would so much rather be Sherlock Holmes. Like, if you had to pick Inspector Gadget or Sherlock Holmes, I'd be Sherlock Holmes every time.
Well, you could be impressively smart and the envy of most of the... literate world, or you could be a man with a pogo stick for legs. So take your pick.
Yeah, basically. All right, we're gonna play some songs, and then we are gonna come back with the real White Noise after show, where we get into some stuff, talk some stuff out. But in the meantime, go to the bathroom, have a cup of tea or the Canadian equivalent, and we'll be right back. This is Stegosaurus, and I hope you enjoy. We'll be right back.
For over 30 years, there has been one voice in the local Vancouver art scene that has stood above the rest, and that's Discorder, that conspiracy, punk rock, foxcore, sassy, still publishing magazine from CITR. We're one of the established and trusted voices of Vancouver's music and arts culture in the Lower Mainland, with 8,000 copies distributed monthly to over 135 distribution locations, from the Lido to Zulu Records.
Discorder is one of a few magazines published by a community radio station, and we only serve up the freshest local and Canadian goods.
We have interviews with artists, album reviews, live show reviews, and articles about everything important to our crazy, unique, varied, and amazing culture in Vancouver and across the country.
Pick up your free copy of Discorder today, or sign up to have it delivered to your door wherever you are.
Check out our website for distribution locations and all the information about advertising and getting involved with Discorder.
Do you like Friends? Well, we like you. So become a member and get a Friends of CITR card. Not only does it make you special, it gets you all kinds of deals with our friends downtown, like 10% off at Bang On T-shirts, Beat Street Records, Studio Records, Community Thrift and Vintage, The Fall Tattooing, and more. Visit CITR.ca for more, or come check us out in the Nest.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That was Katie Moore with Go Home from Fooled by the Sun. All right, Connor. So let's get into the big questions here. We're on the White Noise After Show. I'm Simon Welton. We've got Connor Neckelput in the studio. And we're going through the big stuff that came up in this week's show. So big question number one, sir. One of the sketches this week was, of course, about a gentleman who went into a shop to find something to get mad about. And maybe this is playing on a misconception, but do you think we go looking for things to get mad about? And do you think there's actually like a, you know, I would arguably say there's money behind it, and there's media makes money off making people mad. What do you think?
I think there's no shortage of ills in the world. I think everyone has their own problem in one way or another. And philosophically, you could argue to what degree should we care about everyone's problem? How much should we begin to care about collective problems? And at what point should begin caring about those collective problems? Because if you care about everyone, you just can't do it. Your life would be depressing because you'd be depressed
like,
about
everyone's
depressions.
Yeah, if you got upset about every person who ever died, you would have a messed up life.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you would be emotionally a wreck.
But there is, but within the sort of common sort of sphere, there is an unspoken level at which a communal problem, which doesn't need to be one that you're involved with, but one that you see or you can witness elsewhere, such as perhaps the recent terrorist attacks in Paris, does inspire some sort of grief and outpouring of, yeah, perhaps anger or despair. I guess we're focusing on anger.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't specifically referring to that one. I was more talking about the general idea of there's always something every week. You know, there's an old lady who gets mugged unjustifiably. There's, there's a kid who gets abused. There's always something there that is outrageous and should never happen to anyone. But I feel like it leads to a distortion of the fact that there are, you know, millions of children living happy lives. There are millions of people not murdering each other or committing crime and, you know, horrible matters. Like, there's so much more good than bad that it's almost like we've got to do the news tonight. We can't just do politics because people don't like that. You know, they don't pay as much attention. So let's find something to get totally furious about, which is really a personal thing. Like, for instance, someone's on trial for murder, and
OJ.
Well, maybe OJ's a little different. When you're a celebrity and when you're in the public folk and your job and your career is based on public perception, that's a totally different matter. But when you're a guy who at his lowest moment...
Whoa, Simon, I don't like using that word guy. That makes me feel a bit insecure.
Okay, if you're a person of any gender or specific entity of any sort whatsoever, and you commit a crime and say, you know, it's the worst thing you've ever done. You've murdered someone, you committed assault with a weapon... for money, because you were desperate, because you're an addict, or whatever it is, and you committed the worst thing you've ever done, do we have any reason really to then put them into a parade of media attention and stuff and basically just hang them out to dry before a trial because they're on trial for something that sounds atrocious to our minds, and so it becomes a public information, when in reality this is this guy's worst moment of his life? Why do we have to be there to witness it? Why can't we let the justice and the court systems deal with it, and only when it actually affects public money or public, you know, people, that's the only time we should be there?
Like, yeah.
Amanda Knox trial, why the fuck should we be there? Yes, a woman gets murdered in America, in Italy by an American, and it sounds kind of sordid, but it's really just court entertainment. It's not there for any real reason.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, especially when you look at the court system, especially perhaps using the American example, where jurors and the magistrate are supposed to have no knowledge of the case prior to being selected. And yeah, you have a media frenzy. You make a spectacle of whatever crime this is that we're talking about. But I think it really impedes that sort of thing. And yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, in many cases, I mean, you get some people who just have a propensity to commit crimes for whatever reason. But yeah, you do genuinely have people who lose themselves, who go overboard, who are desperate for whatever reason, and they do commit a crime. And yeah, no, I would agree. If we would be in their shoes, having just killed someone, you know, I couldn't imagine what they're going through. They're probably breaking it. And the next thing we all know is that everyone has an opinion. Everyone's pointing fingers. No one really knows the story besides perhaps the investigators, obviously the person involved,
and hearsay and speculation.
So I do agree, but it's interesting because you think because earlier you said sort of like, you know, there's so much good in the world as well. So pulling it back to a bit more of a broader standpoint, there's much good. Why we focus on the bad? Well, I think because in one way, I mean, what is good and how often does good manifest itself? Is good having a day where you don't do much? Nothing bad happens, but is it good? Or is a good day where you go out and you make some new friends? Like, it kind of depends on what it is. And then I think also it's very simple to sort of commend good. For example, oh, that's great. Fantastic. I'm so happy for you. Whereas to sort of condemn something is simple as well. But I think it can be a lot more sort of nuanced about it.
But that's the problem, is it isn't, in that when we have situations like Joseph Fritzl and people like that who committed horrendous crimes, even before they're proven guilty, they're just taken through the ringer publicly and are vilified. And I'm sure get, you know, especially nowadays where things like Twitter and Facebook make people so accessible, the abuse is just straight at them. You know, there's tons of it going in. And until they're proven guilty, they're as innocent as everybody else, even if they have committed the worst crimes in our society. So they are innocent until that point. So I think that's something that needs to be respected. I mean, perhaps after the trial is over, I think perhaps then a disclosure could be made, arguably. But even then, I don't still see it as much of a public... I don't see it as a public necessity or interest. You know, I still feel that's again, just for your entertainment.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely agree.
You know, unless you're a professional and you need it to reference for other cases, which is an important thing that gets done in law, of course, is that we use legal precedents to then argue the same thing in different cases. So that, of course, is important as a professional. But as someone who just watches it on TV, no, no.
And it's interesting because everyone has an opinion, and as the proverb goes, I mean, those who shout the loudest, that's all I know about that proverb.
Don't remember the rest.
No, I don't remember. But yeah, but it's we hear those who shout the loudest, and regrettably, those people often influence things the most because other people are just too apathetic or too considerate in the fact that they won't actually go out and sort of stand up for something.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they influence it the most as much as they influence the narrative that we
perceive. Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
But that's, again, just a perception. It's not the real action of anything.
Yeah. So, like, everyone has an opinion. Of course, like, you know, you read a story in the newspaper or you hear something from your friend and, yeah, immediately, like, whether your friend tells you, oh, this is what happened, or whether the newspaper tells you this is what happened, You make a decision based on something you haven't looked into yourself. Actually, I think that goes for a lot of things. Any sort of science, anything you believe, really. I think a lot of people have beliefs that really are just kind of based on kind of like what they feel like and what they've maybe been told, but without really pursuing that as an actual, like, hey, let's check this out. Like, you know, global warming, let's check this out. Or like, you know, whatever, like, sort of conspiracy theory or just general kind of, yeah, occurrences or events. Like, let's check it out, see what happens. Like, let's get my own research in here. Most people won't do that. And I can understand why. And there's a lot of things to learn. It's easier just to kind of, it's convenient just to absorb it passively and then regurgitate what you hear. But it does, I think, yeah, it leads to that kind of behavior where spectacles are made of people in these sort of situations, where any kind of event or act or action that immediately may have a bit of a bad feel about it. Maybe someone's like feels that someone is taking advantage of someone else, or a group is being perhaps oppressed for some reason, and then really doesn't go into the nuances of the context of each of those arguments and each of those sort of instances, I think is really damning for those involved and for our society as a whole, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, that's what I like about some media outlets now are doing more of an emphasis on features and analysis, which is not just talking about the event, but looking at the context and what else is to be addressed from that, you know, trigger of that sort of becoming public domain of interest. You know, for example, with the attacks in Paris, then that should trigger a features and analysis of the context of these people being radicalized and how that chain of command has occurred, and also how intelligence can then prevent future things. That's the sort of thing we should be talking about. But it's not. Anyway, we're going to come back. We're going to play some more songs. Hopefully we won't be quite as heavy in the next bit. Maybe we'll have a bit more fun. But this is the Future Heads with Hands of Love. When I was a child, running in the night, I was afraid of what might be. Hiding in the dark and hiding on the streets, for none of what was following me.
done shaping myself around you, done building myself around you. My throat is dry from the quiet, my lips are wet from desire. Turn up the volumes, follow the call, part from the choir. When the ears slipped inside,
there you go. That was The Sows with Turn Up the Volume. All right, Connor, we're chatting again. So my next question, sir, for you is, would you join Anonymous? Or if not them, any other rebel sort of revolutionary group? Is that something that's ever...
Oh, join the Republican Guard.
The Republican Guard, as in like Plato's Republican?
No, as in like the private army of Saddam Hussein.
Why does that one tickle your fancy?
Don't know.
They sound fun.
Seem like a good group of guys.
Yeah, they seem like to be a laugh.
They're a bit of a dark sense of you, but yeah.
Yeah.
A bit of a human noir.
You see, I feel like if you'd asked me at 18 and it was possible, I'd probably go join like some Che Guevara-led communist sort of rebel group. I think at 18 I'd have been down for that, you know. Now I'm a little bit more...
misguided.
No, just a little bit more on the fence than I used to be about a lot of things, I think. Or at least I don't see them as black and white enough to get a gun and start doing something about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting joining Anonymous, for instance, as the original kind of intent and as per portrayed in the sketch. I don't know how to program. I'd be useless.
Yeah, I feel like that's the problem with Anonymous. I'd just be their cheerleader. I'd just be like, yeah, I'd be like, guys.
Can I operate your Twitter feed, please?
Yeah. If you need a guy to stand there in a mask, I will be there.
I'll do your videos, guys. Let me know.
You need something written? I'll write something that sounds scary but funny. That's what I'll do.
The interesting thing about Anonymous, though, is like, is it a cohesive group or is it just anyone with a mask or a computer? Because as I understand it, I haven't done a lot of research myself, going back to the last one, so I can't say too much, but I believe there is actually at this stage a sort of a centralized kind of consistent group who do a lot of things, but then again, a lot of people who do join in or who do use the name Anonymous aren't necessarily affiliated with
them. Well, there's like a core group and then there's a lot of fringe people who sort of do things in the name of Anonymous and aren't really part of it.
So then how... legitimate is that? So, for instance, let's say we are computer programmers and we think, you know, there's injustice in this part of the world as part of the World Wide Web. Let's go and cause havoc or let's go and fix it. So we go do that. We say, oh, when we found out, let's be anonymous. Anonymous, they're great. Yeah, let's do that. And we're going to be anonymous. So we do that, do our bit, success. Then how connected are we with Anonymous? How much can we go? I mean, obviously you're not going to go do that because the whole point of it is you're anonymous, but...
But you can, I think it's the similar thing then to do what a lot of people have done in the past is you're an affiliate, of that group. The same way Boko Haram is an affiliate of ISIS, the same way that Communist China was an affiliate of the Soviet Union. Like, you can be sort of a satellite or you could do it in their name and in their ideology, and therefore you are you know, in theory, doing things they would agree with. So, but it, yeah, it's kind of weird because you could, you know, eventually you say, well, we're not the group, we're the ideology, and I'm following the anonymous ideology.
And then how much? Because as a, I believe there is an ideology. I think there is an anonymous sort of doctrine somewhere you can probably find. But then how much do you, how much can you stick to that ideology? How much can you invoke it in a correct way? And then how much can it lead to sort of vigilantism? So I guess you, linking this back to our previous point, so someone, you know, gets arrested for supposedly committing a very gruesome murder. How, what happens then when people see that, they read it? They don't think too much about it, but they want to make a difference. They go online as anonymous or as anonymous sort of vigilante affiliates, and they go and then they log into that person's Facebook and or email, and they broadcast lots of stuff they've been sending, invade their privacy and make a mockery out of them. So there is that kind of threat as well.
Right. I see what you're saying, but, you know, that can happen in all groups and all walks of life where you can, you know, someone can do something in your name which you don't actually agree with or is unjust.
But as part of an ideology, though, I mean, perhaps, but perhaps not as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's a bit like, you know, like Marxism has this problem where one guy wrote it and then another guy tried to create a framework to carry it out, which then another guy, when Lenin died, Stalin took over and then just ignored the framework and did his own thing. So then you're very far away from what Marx was talking about. So really the only way to be sure would be if the same guy who wrote the Anonymous Doctrine then tried to come up with a framework to actually carry it out, because then he would at least see the same end goal as the original creator.
When you say framework, are you imagining one of those charts where it goes, are you doing this for good reasons? Yes, no, follow yes, follow no. And then you get to the next question is,
I was thinking one of those like film master plans, and he's got string attached to like pieces of paper and stuff on the wall, and he just looks at it and he's, you know, he's processing.
A massive 3D montage.
And yeah, there's a huge montage, there's some great music, and at the end he like sweats a bit and then he's done. Yeah. That's kind of, you know, he like, they look at each other and they smile and they high five. And then Anonymous is ready.
And then they click enter and the world explodes.
Yeah, if that, I don't think that's their end goal. Like, they seem to be kind of against the people who they see as, you know, corporatism and sort of terrorism. That, like, they're anti-establishment. They're not anti-world. Let's.
What language do you think Anonymous uses? Is it English as the kind of lingua franca? Or do you think that they all sort of communicate?
I think they actually mainly use Klingon, I believe, is what they use.
Because that would be great. Wouldn't it be, that'd be great if they're using Klingon, they're spelling things totally wrong. So they're trying to, you know, like, hack an ISIS feed. And all it is, it's turning out like Dolan memes. Where it just
or like
it wrong.
The FBI is like trying to crack their code. And one of them's like, guys, I think it's Elfish. I think that's... Oh, God damn it. Quick, get Stephen Colbert. We need him.
Peter Jackson, we're up now.
All right, let's move on. Next question, sir. We talked about organ, not so much donation, but organ theft this week. So I'm wondering, do you think people should be, by default, organ donors and have to opt out of the program? Or should they, as we are now, where you have to declare it, otherwise your organs, you basically, unless you're family consents to it, you can't take someone's organs.
The impression I get is that a lot of people who aren't religious or are more secular wouldn't have a problem with donating their organs. But I think there are other people who are religious, which isn't to try to make a binary, but I think general trends, people who are tend to be more religious are less inclined to donate their organs.
Yeah, if you feel your body matters precious.
Exactly. So, I mean, me personally, not a problem. I mean, the way I treat my organs, probably not a good idea for the next person who uses them.
Yeah. Maybe medical science might be a good place for my body to
exactly,
go.
My asthmatic lungs, probably not going to help too many people. But yeah, no, I would happily, I would say, if I could contribute to someone's life in my own death, that would be fantastic. That would be amazing.
Yeah, or even like be a part of Body Worlds and then be stood up shaking someone's hand with your dick hanging out.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not a bad way to go. It could be worse.
Bend over, skinless man.
And related to this, would you sell your organs? Like, you're in a bind, you need 20 grand, your kid needs a kidney operation, and you can sell a kidney to pay for it.
Why don't I just give my kid my kidney?
Maybe, no. Well, okay, he needs a lung. He needs something even more. Okay. He needs something you can't give him. But you could sell a kidney and give it to him. Do you do it?
Ooh, tough question. I mean, that's a good philosophical question.
Because I feel like if you were just like, are you going to sell a kidney? Would you sell a kidney? Most people right now go, no. I'd find another way.
Yeah.
I'd suck dick. I'd find something. I'd find a way. I wouldn't sell a kidney. But would you do that in like that sort of situation?
So it's my own kid.
Yeah,
not some person from another country. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. No, not just
it's
some...
not. It's not like some sort of Christmas thing where I donated a kid yeah. to save someone in Africa for you.
Yeah, you've not watched present. It's a Wonderful Life and just changed your life around for any reason. Yeah.
I mean, I would do anything to help my child. I think look for other ways as much as is possible. But yeah. if that is the only recourse, then I think I'd go under the knife to donate a kidney, to sell the kidney, to then buy a pair of lungs, to then give to my kid. Sounds a bit convoluted, but I think I do.
Yeah, you know, it's...
It will require a Gantt chart, for sure, and a lot of timelines and, like, Excel documents.
I think I'd just try and find a way to get the 20 grand. It can't be that hard. You'd find a way.
Well, but... I mean, if you have a metal detector, you can wander around Europe and just look for old Roman coins.
Hey, I've been watching The Detectorists, which is this weird comedy that's, like, about the countryside, about people with metal detectors going around. Just weird that you talk about this. It's the new season.
Do they ever
out.
Kind of, like, put them up to each other's belts, and then it goes, Wee-zoo! And they go, yeah, your penis is metal.
It's a bit cleverer than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because that's what I would have thought it would be, really, to be honest.
But it's what's his name? Mackenzie Crook. It's Mackenzie Crook from The Office, the original British Office. He wrote, directed, and starred in it.
Nice.
It's on BBC4, but yeah, you can download it. Detectorists. It's actually very good. It's a bit cleverer than you'd expect. But yeah, definitely check that out. Anyway, we've run out of time, unfortunately. So what I'm going to do is we're going to play two more awesome tracks, but we're not going to come back and talk because we don't have any time. But we will be back next week for... Actually, no, we won't. I'm lying. We're preempted.
He does that a lot.
We're preempted next week.
Did you know that most of White Noise is actually a lie?
Yeah, pretty much. Don't take it seriously, please. But we won't be back next week, unfortunately, because there is a special day of students getting on the radio and saying lots of things that apparently they're not allowed to say other times. So,
all lies.
So you should definitely check it out. But if you don't get a chance to do that, if you can't be asked, please just come back the week after. And listen to us, do our thing, do our sketch comedy, as always, 11 p.m. It's the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoyed tonight. As I said, we'll be back in a fortnight. That's 2 weeks for most of you. And we'll see you very soon.